You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good Friday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Kington here with Jim Cramer. David Faber has the morning off. Futures are pretty solid as we're coming off the worst declines of the month so far. COVID cases in focus, earnings, and Arizona. Our roadmap begins with Disney and Cisco earnings, though, both rallying. Cisco's Chuck Robbins is going to join us this hour. Plus the COVID surge, new case records, Elon Musk now questioning testing in this country. And NBC News projects the president-elect Biden flips Arizona for the first time since 1996. And that's where we will begin this morning as the president continues his legal challenges today. President-elect Biden winning the state of Arizona. That's according to NBC News Decision Desk overnight, further cementing his victory in last week's election. Biden now holds 290 electoral votes to Trump's 217. Georgia and North Carolina are the ones that are still too close to call, Jim. But if you put those two together, even flipping those for the president would not be enough.
Yeah, look, Carl, this matters tremendously. I think there was a lot of uncertainty sowed in the last 4 days that perhaps the president just wouldn't leave the White House, that the legal challenges would go on forever, that December 13th would come, December 14th is the last day, and there would be no concession about the Electoral College. And this kind of makes it so that it's less likely. Plus, the attack on Fox, believe it or not, made people realize maybe there's a second life. Maybe they're a station that will be owned by or run by Trump. So what's happening is if you take that off the table and you deal with the fact that we have a big caseload, but at the same time we have vaccine, and don't forget, J&J is going to be heard from soon. I think they have a billion ready because they've been working side by side with another company that makes it. So I think that we've got a situation where maybe there's a little more certainty. The idea that the president would vacate the White House is going to make it so that we feel that there won't be something that's such a wild card that we can't even bear to think about.
Right. Now, all that said, Navarro was on Fox Business this morning and said we're moving forward here at the White House under the assumption that there will be a second Trump term. I assume at this point, is that just trolling? What is that?
I've always enjoyed Peter Navarro.
Okay. All right. That says enough, I guess, Jim.
So no need. So my mom always said no need to say anything negative.
Yep. So the worries that you had earlier in the week about potential black swan, dark scenarios regarding transition are ameliorated in your mind this morning.
Yeah, well, what happens is there's an apparatus, and the apparatus, including the Homeland Security, have spoken. And the apparatus says, okay, listen, you want to send in the FBI? We're going to send in the National Guard. You want to send in agents from a dark place? Well, we're going to send in the state troopers. I mean, it just happens that there is a security apparatus that has spoken up. And I think that took the black swan off the table and then gave the president started to think of some pretty interesting things to do. I encourage him. I like him in the debate. Yeah. Thinking about challenging a Biden 4 years from now, that'll be good. But the idea of vacating the White House is becoming increasingly on the table. On the table.
So, Jim, why? I heard you talking to Andrew before the top of the hour about how the market is handling this surge much better than obviously it did in the spring. Almost fighting the news or the records that we get every day. And I wonder if you think that's about therapeutics, vaccine hopes, because it does appear now, according to many reports, that the White House has been sidelined from negotiations. It's now McConnell Pelosi versus Mnuchin Pelosi, and that likelihood of a bill before January is slim.
Yeah, I don't think I don't expect a bill. Look, I'm one of those people who thinks that if a virus doubles in 10 days, as this one did, from 74 to 140, then you could argue that we're all going to get it. It's just happening too fast. And so what you're dealing is we have to have a J&J come out and say, listen, we are going to have a billion and we're going to have them in 2 months. And so you just stay the course. That's how the market acts. The market acts that they've got a wild card, that we haven't seen the wild card yet. We'll have Moderna, but J&J is the wild card. And I think very strongly that that is going to make it so that people say, yeah, we'll get through this. I had Ford on last night. Ford thinks we'll get through it. Disney, they were castigated California state government saying, listen, we have the ability to be able to make this safe. Cisco, hey, we've got COVID, but you know what? We're going to triumph over COVID. So I do think that unless there are hospitals that are overrun, there's a belief that we can get to the promised land because the companies themselves, all that we've had, the major ones, all seem to know how to deal with it. I mean, it is impressive, Carl. I mean, I asked Jim Farley yesterday whether the assembly lines are going to close. You know, the assembly lines closed in the spring. He's quite confident that the assembly lines aren't going to close this time, even though there's far more COVID. How do you explain that? Well, I think it's because they see it coming and they're making plans.
Yeah, that's and that goes for food supply and grocers and all of the things that we worried about in the spring as well, Jim, as the likes of ConAgra have told you on Mad and the recent weeks. So I'm glad you brought up Disney because investors may wonder, is this a stay-at-home name with Disney Plus or is this an epicenter name with Disney World?
Well, we'll find that out. They've got that December 10 investor meeting, but I think that everyone felt pretty good after this because there are some oddities that people didn't realize. What holds the key? How about Disney Plus Hotstar? That's in India, going Indonesia. I think that what people are trying to figure out is, you know what, it's not just a Verizon come one with 10% of the people coming from Verizon. This Disney brand resonates more than Netflix, and I think the analysts are all kind of caught flat-footed. At the same time, they didn't expect that the theme parks would be doing as well in an era of COVID. Disney Plus is still losing a lot of money, but we'll see through that because Disney has tons of money. And they're also making a lot of movies. So you came away from the Disney call saying, whew, that's another bullet dodge. I had Cisco. We had two Ciscos. There's the SYY Cisco, and then this is CSCO Cisco. Mm-hmm. SYY is the largest food distributor in the country. You know what? They are now projecting that there will be far fewer restaurants going out of business than we thought. Now, that's different from the Cheesecake Factory recommendation that we got today, saying that there will be 40% of stores that will be closed. But I've got to tell you, there is a path, Carl. There's a path through COVID to the vaccine, and the stock market wants to go through that path.
To your point, Jim, in the interim, the Disney Plus numbers were amazing. 73.7 million paid subs. We were looking for 65.5. And by the way, you see, we'll talk to Chuck Robbins of Cisco, the other one, later this hour. Here's what Bob Chapek said about those sub numbers.
The growth of Disney Plus speaks volumes about the strength of our IP, our unparalleled brands and franchises, and our amazing content creators. All part of the Disney difference that sets us apart from everyone else. And when you look across our full suite of streaming services, we have exceeded 120 million paid subscriptions worldwide.
Jim, I'll tell you, aside from the numbers themselves, what struck me was his comment about Mulan and the premium sub strategy saying we've got something here, which has all kinds of implications for Disney's relationships with exhibitors and the content pipeline itself.
I think it's jump ball. I think even Disney's trying to figure out what to do. I mean, just it was a little one. Hulu, 4.1 million Hulu Live subs that people are paying a lot of money for. The streams of revenue here, whether it be sports, whether it be live, whether it be a Mulan, whether it be anything that they have in their pipe, and they have tons in the pipe, tell me that people are dramatically underestimating how many subs they'll have. 2022, just as Bob Iger said when he did this, 2022 would be the year where maybe they could break even. Remember, he was saying 2024 is the year they're going to break out and make a fortune. I think you have to accelerate that timetable. I think that 2023 is going to be the year they make a fortune. The reason I say that is because they're growing at a rate that no one thought they could grow. I mean, is it possible they have 250 million homes? It wouldn't shock me whatsoever. This is the way people thought they couldn't find them. That's wrong because the IP is as strong, maybe stronger even than they knew. I mean, one of the things that you go back and forth with Bob Iger and you realize that maybe we're all underestimating the universality of Disney, especially at a time when things are pretty lousy around the world.
Right, right. Now, on the last point on Disney, Jim, we talked about Disneyland and the ongoing battle that the company has with the state of California, which, by the way, has now crossed a million COVID cases. Chapek addressed that as well. Quick listen.
People have shown a willingness to visit our parks, which I believe is a testament to the fact that they feel confident in the measures we've taken. And we are very encouraged by the positive news earlier this week on the progress of potential vaccines. Unfortunately, we are extremely disappointed that the state of California continues to keep Disneyland closed, despite our proven track record. Our health and safety protocols are all science-based and have the support of labor unions representing 99% of our hourly cast members.
Yeah. So, Jim, if this doesn't turn, what does that mean?
Well, it's just that it's a flagship, and everybody who's been there knows that it's just an important icon. But it's small enough that it won't necessarily hurt the numbers, but it does make you give you less confidence. I think California's panicking. That was a shot across the bow. I mean, I thought that was amazing, basically saying California just does not have control over their situation, so please don't bring that upon us. I think Disney is probably the most forward-looking about these. And the next thing I think they'll be able to do is some sort of rapid test. A lot of companies are going to a rapid test where you'll be able to get something right there. And I think that will be next for Disney. They'll be pioneers. They talk to everybody. They talk to Abbott Labs. They talk to anybody who does testing. They are in the face of saying, what should we do? So it's not just going to be vaccine. That'll be another upside surprise, I believe, when they get together December 10. People are going to want to stay long that stock into the December 10 investor day, because I really think that what will happen is people realize, boy, are they liquid. They're in it for the long term. And this thing does not belong at 140. It belongs much higher. So I think that this is just a terrific situation.
Yeah. When you mentioned testing, Jim, are you unnerved at all by Elon Musk's tweets seeming to question the quality of testing in this country?
Well, PCRs is, I think PCR is really, really strong. The antigen tests, I do not trust. I just don't trust them. So I agree with him. Antigen is really very erratic, and I think that we should not take any confidence in antigen test. I know that the people who produce those will hate what I just said. I'm sorry. Antigen test, no. PCR test, yes. Remember, take a look at the number of people in the NFL. Remember, NFL was just team after team after team. Now you'll get one, maybe two. The NFL tests PCR 7 days a week. Initially, they did 3 days, then they went five. Now they do seven. PCR is a method that no one has disputed. But Elon's right on the antigen. You can have wildly, wildly erratic numbers. So I think he's right. He's no longer erratic. Antigen's erratic, not Elon Musk.
Well, Jim, I mean, we may love Elon Musk and we talk about him a lot, but this is the same man who back in March said that cases would go to zero by April, which people have not forgotten.
No, he has not been, I'd say he's been much more with President Trump on that. He's been wrong. Was a ventilator is not a big issue. I mean, he really thought this thing was going to run out. I'm loath to criticize him, if only just because he's right on a lot of other things. He got this one wrong. I think he's going to be wrong on hydrogen. I think hydrogen's going to be very big. I think he's making a mistake that it has to be electric. At the same time, we cannot avoid what's happening with NIO. We can't do that. We have with Fisker. Any one of these electric is just going insane. Remember, Nikola is hydrogen. I think hydrogen is a great fuel because it's green hydrogen is very, very expensive, but very good. But I think that Elon is going to be wrong by just focusing on electric, right, that the antigen is way overstated as a good way to do things. Boy, will they hate me that I said that, Carl. Yeah. They will hate me. I don't care. I'm kind of like, I'm again, Sam Girard. You know, I didn't kill my wife. I don't care.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Jim. You mentioned the NFL. It's nice to see that the halftime show of the Super Bowl is now booked with the weekend. That's good news for Pepsi and good news for all of us with that game just a couple of months away. We'll take a break here. There is a ton to get to today, including Cisco. As Jim said, we'll talk to Chuck Robbins later on this hour. There's Palantir. There's DoorDash. And a lot more as we try to rebound from yesterday's losses.
Wouldn't it be great to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, makes it easy. I use it to put my investment account and 401k accounts into one hub and get expert tips that help me confidently manage my money. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Anywhere. Big news out of DoorDash as it looks to go public. Let's get to Leslie Picker. Hey, Leslie.
Hey, Carl, that's right. They flipped their S-1 to be public this morning, showing some pretty impressive top-line growth. Revenue more than tripling year-to-date from $587 million in 2019 to $1.9 billion year-to-date in 2020. Now, it's important to note that they did acquire Caviar at the end of 2019, but there's no denying that this company certainly benefited from the uptick in deliveries during the pandemic. Their net losses narrowed by about 72% during that time. To $149 million and even posted profits in the second quarter of this year, but then turned back to net losses in the third quarter of this year. Now, how do they make money? A lot of people have this question. They do generate the substantial majority of their revenue from fees paid by customers and commissions charged to their merchants for orders completed through their marketplace. They actually give an example in the S-1 where a consumer pays, say, a $32.90 bill. DoorDash keeps about $4.90 of that, while the merchant keeps $20, a little over $20, and the Dasher, the delivery man or woman, keeps $7.90 of that. In terms of market share, they've been very competitive here. They say that they now have about 50%, followed by Uber Eats and Grubhub, which is impressive considering they only last year surpassed their competitors to have the highest market share in the delivery market in the U.S. Now, in terms of risk factors, are pretty standard here. Ability to grow and compete, avoid interruptions in services, manage their costs related to their Dashers. And another impressive number here was their Dash Pass. They talked about 5 million consumers on Dash Pass. This is the flat monthly delivery fee of $9.99. So a lot of people are analogizing that to like an Amazon Prime, guys.
Leslie, first of all, it's great to see you on the show. I get to watch at 10. Nice that you're in ours.
Good to see you, Jim.
Yep. Tony Hsu, the XU, the CEO, is a remarkable man. Great story. Yesterday, it showed me that they're redoubling their commitment to empower local communities, National Urban League. I really love what they're doing, $200 million. But let me ask you, I saw that when they talked about on the call involving Uber, when they said that they are going to go all in food, it struck me as being something as a restaurateur that people didn't realize how hard it is. But now I realize we're talking about a duopoly, and that's going to be great for business. This company could have unbelievable numbers, even though restaurants might decline by 40%. So, I mean, what kind of factors are they saying in terms of the number of restaurants that might close because of COVID?
I'm still reading through the document. I haven't seen any specific numbers or projections that they have as it relates to restaurants that might close for COVID. But what's fascinating about this model is we're starting to see all of these virtual restaurants pop up where they don't even need a brick and mortar store. They just need a kitchen, a menu, and the ability for someone to deliver that food to consumers. That's been really, really popular. And that's something where a DoorDash or an Uber Eats, you know, wouldn't suffer in that kind of environment because they can still have their infrastructure, their technology supports some of those initiatives.
It's absolutely great to point out. I mean, some of us are stuck with rent. That's the problem. We got things called landlords. But thank you for being on the show.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jim.
It's a great point, Jim. And on a week where Chipotle opened their first digital-only restaurant, Leslie, really quick on the big names behind it, SoftBank, Sequoia, and some others.
That's exactly correct. SoftBank and Sequoia both mentioned as principal investors in this company. And interestingly, they'll have three classes of stock, something that we've become accustomed to with a lot of these founder-led companies. Class A has one vote. B has 20 votes. C has no votes. With this first filing, we don't really get a sense of exactly who owns what and how much they are planning to own after the offering. But that will come in additional filings later on down the road.
Leslie, thanks. It's a big thing, and we've been waiting for it for a while, Jim. Along with Airbnb, it's the next few weeks could be interesting, don't you think? And you know these guys pretty well.
Oh, those guys, I mean, look, we were caviar people from day one. And that was Sarah Friar. I mean, you look, when you have to have delivery. You can't make a living. When they bought caviar, I was very afraid that they would jack the rates up. In fact, what Tony did was cut them because he knew all the restaurants were suffering. So, I mean, look, I'm not, before he was, it wasn't public, but he's cared. And we all know how bad the restaurants are doing. So he made a real pledge to us.
Yeah. Jim, we'll talk more about that in a few moments. In the meantime, as we said earlier, Cisco is the biggest S&P gainer in the pre-market, along with Disney there. You can see some of the pre-market movers under the upside. We'll talk with Chairman and CEO Chuck Robbins shortly after the opening bell, which is coming up in about 9 minutes. Don't go away.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until
the Singapore presentation is at
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Time for a mad dash on this Friday. Jim's watching Salesforce.
Yes. Yesterday, Keith Weiss at Morgan Stanley went from buy to hold. I said it was heresy. Salesforce, especially after that last quarter. So today, dueling Salesforce, RBC ups its price target, 275 to 285, says things are strong. Remember, yesterday I felt it was more of a valuation call for all of this group, although they did say good things about ServiceNow. This piece basically says that Salesforce is doing incredibly well. Let's watch Salesforce as the tail of the tape to see whether this market can rally after what was yesterday a very dismal day, except for the last half hour where the market was very strong. Let's see if the last half hour continues or we revert to what was most of the day. Salesforce will tell us.
Interesting. You know, Jim, you mentioned RBC, which reminds me of another call they make today on Disney. They go to 170. That's a street high on Disney. The title of the report is You Ain't Never Had a Recovery Play Like Me. A bit of a reference there to Aladdin. And they say that near-term results are going to be noisy, but you know, it kind of reminds me of what Goldman said yesterday about consumption, pent-up savings, all of these things that they believe will be unleashed in the middle of next year. I mean, they're talking GDP of maybe 7 in Q2.
Right. Well, look, I mean, this really did create a lot of creativity on the part of analysts. Morgan Stanley says that number was the appetizer. Of course, that's referring to the analyst meeting. You mentioned the recovery play like me. My favorite was Disney. It's a streaming world after all, which was from Barclays. How clever have they become? Holy cow. I do think that that what's going on here is their belief that we'll get the vaccine. People will be clamoring to go to Disney. And the Disney cruises, by the way, came up as something that they are talking about the hurdles that you have to go through in order to make a cruise be safe. That they're ripe for being vaccines. You got to have vaccines for the cruises. You really do. So I think that this is one of those situations where people are going to say it's next year at this time. It's going to be incredible. The comparisons are going to be really easy by Disney. I reiterate that this is a smart call and that the company is both financially sound, even though they did not do that next dividend. And it's got a great growth path for 2021, 2022.
Right. Disney, between Disney and I think one other name this morning, if I can find it here, Disney and Cisco will add about 55 points to the Dow, judging from the pre-market. There's the opening bell and some pretty good breadth. Jim, really quick, before we get to a couple individual names, Goldman also sort of laid out the phases in which they think a vaccine will come to Americans next year. Phase one, first responders. Phase two, teachers and people with comorbidities. Then you get into phase three, kids. And finally, they said phase four, which is probably going to be folks like you and me who don't fall into those specific categories. But
I think they're guessing.
We're starting to see this fall into a forecast. You think they're guessing?
Yeah, I think they're guessing. The public health authorities I've been talking to are saying, listen, the group that we really have to stop is the super spreaders. That would be the kids who come back from Thanksgiving. And then we do people we have to, in protected classes, but that you do not go with first responders, of course, but that it's the kids. If we can nip them, that's who's causing these incredible spikes. So I think that it's all up in the air, in part because we have many different people who speak for our public health in our country. And that's causing sowing great confusion. That's why I keep saying, listen, it's got to be, you know, if J&J delivers like I think, then we might be able to make it so that it's a polio vaccine where everybody gets it. And everybody gets it in a very short period of time. Those of us who got the polio vaccine and then the polio sugar cube, and I know we're a bigger country now, twice the number of people, but we all remember it was mandatory. You had to go to the high school. You got it, period. And if we have show some gumption like that in this country, then we'll get past this. I don't know whether we have the willpower in Washington to do what we did for polio, but that's what has to happen.
Yeah, you remind me of what Bullard said this morning, and that is he believes that this new spread, household-level spread, requires what he called a new education initiative to change behavior, something that maybe you could argue we should have already had. Meantime, Jim, Ron Klain, chief of staff to the president-elect, says that the president-elect will have a COVID advisor who works in the White House with direct access to him and who will brief him daily. So maybe the communication you're talking about manages to come.
Yeah, look, Klain's a seasoned hand. I met Klain years ago, and you're talking about a totally different White House. You're talking about White House. Or, look, some people say it's a swamp-filled White House for all the whatever. But they're taking this thing at a level. Remember, the president-elect is so mask-oriented. Why? Because he knows how pathetic our defenses are against this disease. It's masks, it's social distancing. But if you get together and you're screaming at a bar and one person has it, all get it. I mean, that's what we've realized. It's not the hand-washing, sure, but it's viral load. People don't talk about it. It's really professors of aerosol, of which there are only two that really understand aerosol. It's about aerosol buildup, and I think that the people in the White House will recognize what's really causing the problems. Does it mean that restaurants and bars have to close? Sadly, yes. Done. You want to stop this thing? That's who has to close. I don't want a lockdown of the country. Just want to lock down the places where people get it.
Right. Right. Well, I think even Dr. Fauci yesterday said that it might not be necessary, obviously.
Yeah.
Cisco's leading the whole S&P. Going back to levels here, back to Labor Day, I see Piper goes to 45, RBC goes to 49, and we'll talk to Chuck in a minute.
Oh, look, that was just a very big surprise. Analysts were incredulous. Many of them didn't understand how that could happen so quickly. Chuck Robbins, who is forthcoming about everything in his life, including the fact that he's a Falcon fan, which is really too bad, walked through everything to the point where people started realizing, oh, this is what Chuck promised. So there were some disingenuous analysts who were ready to pounce, and they got nothing to pounce on. They got nothing. You know, probably a good time to go to Chuck.
Yeah.
All right. Shares of Cisco are rallying, as we just mentioned. It was a definitive earnings beat. It was also, I think, more important, a very, very good outlook. So why don't we bring in Chuck Robbins right now? Chuck is chairman and CEO of Cisco. Hey, Chuck, it's always good to see you.
Well, Jim, Carl, thanks for having me, and it's great to see you all. To talk to you anyway.
Right. Well, Chuck, there was a moment in the call where we were talking earlier about how companies are getting through COVID. And you said customers have come to grips with the fact that this thing is going to be with us for some period of time. And oddly, because of what you have, Chuck, that's actually good for sales for you.
Well, Jim, you know, first off, I want to just thank all of our employees for all their hard work and their commitment to our customers during the last 6 to 9 months. And I think what we saw was exactly what we thought we saw in the summer, which was, you know, early on our customers spent a great deal of effort and time just getting their employees productive and working from home. And then they went into a bit of a pause, which was our last quarter, where they reprioritized what they were going to be spending their money on. And then I think they came to the conclusion that, hey, this thing's going to be with us. It's going to end sometime, but we don't know when, and we can't just sit on our hands, so we have to start moving. And we saw some customers begin to do that, and you know, it was, we saw improvement. It's not where we want to be, but we certainly saw improvement. And I'll tell you that the consistency we saw in the quarter from the beginning to the end is what gave us the confidence to have a bit of a different tone on the call yesterday.
Well, I think the tone, and by the way, I want to wish Kelly Kramer the best. She's a terrific CFO. Moving on, there were some things that you said about large transactions showing up in the funnel, a robust pipeline, high teens growth in Europe, federal spending. Even service provider was not horrible, Chuck. It did seem like that this is the quarter where it came together, and you did say that it would be next year. You said that it would be enterprise 5G. Have you pulled forward because of COVID?
Well, I think what we saw, Jim, is we saw across the business, we saw our commercial business improve, which was the big thing. The last two quarters had been in the mid-20s negative. And that's the small, medium businesses, mid-sized enterprises that we know have been most affected by COVID. We saw that business improve. It went from negative 23 last quarter to negative 8. And in the U.S., it improved even more, which is the lion's share of that business. You know, enterprise is very big deal driven, so it was down a bit, but I think it'll bounce back. Service provider, if you look in the U.S., it was roughly flat. And a big contributor to that was the web scale players. And, you know, we've spent the last 5 years working hard to reestablish ourselves there. And I think we're beginning to see the fruits of that. And the service provider business in Europe was up high teens. And that was all driven by the web scale players as well. And then public sector was strong around the world. So it was mixed, but there were a lot of green shoots, I would say.
Okay, one of the things that kind of mystifies me, you talked about high def value video needed in every conference room. Obviously, WebEx, very secure. But there's another outfit, Zoom Video, run by, I know, a colleague, because I think that you play fair, run by Eric Yuan. Their valuation is $119 billion. They do business to consumer, and they do business to business. How are you going to be able to blunt Zoom Video from taking your clients?
Well, Jim, a couple things. Number one, I think the overall market has certainly expanded, and WebEx has done a great job. Our team's done a great job of scaling. We talked about 600 million meeting attendees in the last month versus, you know, almost double what we saw in March. So, and in Asia, what we're seeing right now, even as they return to office, the actual usage of the platform is still increasing. And I think, you know, if we get back to security, privacy, and enterprise-grade platforms, you know, you've got governments around the world that are running on WebEx with WebEx Legislate. And Jeetu Patel, who we hired, he was the product officer of Box, who has now come over. He has redefined the strategy for the platform. The feature velocity is very impressive right now. And I think the other thing you reference is when our customers begin to go back to the office, they are going to put high-def video in every conference room because every meeting is going to be hybrid. And we haven't seen that yet. And when you start looking at high-definition video in conference rooms, we are the leader, tightly integrated with WebEx, and we think that'll continue to create a tailwind for that business.
Wow, that's fascinating, Chuck. I wonder, you know, I had to go back a while ago. It was last August of 19 that you joined us, and we were talking about China at the time. And you said in China, where they have optionality, they're favoring local vendors. We don't know if that's a short-term thing or a long-term thing. Do we have an answer to that question a year later?
Well, I think, Carl, it's, you know, China is an interesting situation right now. It is certainly caught up in the geopolitics. I think that, you know, to some extent, a new administration will see the different tone. I think we'll still, you know, I'm sure that they'll still be tough, but I think they will actually try to have conversations and find a way forward where both countries can actually operate in a way that is right for both countries. And, you know, I was invited to speak actually at the China Development Forum just 2 days ago. So that was a good sign. And, you know, we continue to be committed. We've been there 30 years. We're staying tough, and we're going to try to ride this thing out.
Okay. So, Chuck, there's some things that I'm trying to catch up on. You've made some acquisitions, and I want to see whether they're bringing anything to fruit. For instance, the BroadSoft acquisition. Where is that? I don't hear much about the Thousand Eyes. These were really interesting when they happened, but mind melt. But I don't hear you talk about them. What have they done competitively for you?
Well, a lot of them are actually like mind melds being integrated into our collaboration portfolio. So you don't see it as a product. You'll see it as a capability within the platforms. If you look at Thousand Eyes, it is an incredible network monitoring platform that's being integrated with AppDynamics. You remember that acquisition? And a platform we have called Intersight, so that we can actually provide full stack observability for these new cloud-based applications that are running in a very distributed fashion. And so all those assets are being utilized, they're being integrated, and we're really pleased with the value that they're providing to our customers right now.
Why don't you talk about them then on the call?
Well, we talked about Thousand Eyes yesterday, and
massive
from a revenue perspective.
Chuck, the differential between you and everybody else is made by these acquisitions, and it's really terrific. Not that I'm like sitting here saying, listen, Meraki's the greatest, but you know what I mean. Like, when you put them all together, it made it so that you have the competitive offering versus others. And I often feel that on the call, it's commodity versus commodity. But the acquisitions have made it so it's not commodity versus commodity. Am I right?
Well, let me give you an example. Jim, we bought a company called Babel Labs just a month or two ago, and it's already been deployed in the WebEx platform. And what does it do? It actually takes care of one of the biggest issues that we have in this world we're living in right now, which is the vacuum cleaner, the lawn blower, the dog barking. It actually takes all that background noise out of the meeting session, so that this whole notion of can you go on mute please. So a lot of these acquisitions are actually doing incredibly strategic things within platforms that we already sell, and we're really pleased with how that's being integrated and what it's doing for the rest of our portfolio.
Yeah, okay, so can you do, for instance, the DocuSign deal with Zoom I thought was great. Can you do something that makes it so that, speaking of Babel, that language, whatever language I speak is immediately translated in Russian, immediately translated in German? Because these are the things that I think I want in the new world where we're not traveling, Chuck. We're not, maybe we all realize, and you can speak to this,
right.
Maybe we all realize that it isn't so great to travel all the time. And I think you have a superior proposition. If you could make it so that we are translated right on and can close deals right on, Chuck, we're not going anywhere. And we're going to save companies a fortune.
Well, stay tuned. All of that technology is coming. We have a big event in December called WebEx One. And you're going to hear a lot about the innovation that we're going to bring forward in that platform. And there's a lot of what you just described that I think will be coming. I know will be coming on our platform. And giving you the ability today to do real-time transcription of meetings, to have assistants in meetings that are taking action items, and then doing that language translation real-time in the very near future. I mean, these are capabilities that pre-pandemic weren't as important, but today we know as we look to post-pandemic, we're going to be in a hybrid work world, and every meeting we have is going to have a remote attendee. And so we need to provide these capabilities. The teams are working really hard. I'm proud of what they've done. The feature velocity, again, is at a pace that we've never seen. And you're going to see a lot of those capabilities show up in the platform.
Well, I'm going to get rid of the dog barking. It makes it so it's so amateurish. One last question under the outgoing president. It was always pretty punitive if you decided, you know what, I'm going to put a factory somewhere else or build a plant somewhere else. This high teens growth in Europe says to me, maybe you need to throw some more people in Europe, maybe even build a headquarters for Europe that's important. I know you already have something over there. Under a Biden regime, would you be less reluctant to be able to commit resources overseas if you think it could help your bottom line?
Well, Jim, let me clarify that the teens in Europe was in the service provider space. I just want to be clear. But,
okay.
Our overall supply chain is distributed across 14 countries today, and we optimize it to distribute our products to countries around the world, and we're going to continue to do that. So, there are lots of policy changes that could occur that would make it more attractive for companies to manufacture more in the U.S., but today we do manufacture around the world. Our supply chain is massively distributed, and that's in order to, we have to deal with risk, we have to deal with tax, we have to deal with product delivery and on-time delivery, and all of those things come into how we design our supply chain.
Oh, the supply chain was, I thought a lot of people were betting against you on that. Obviously, you delivered, and you deliver on the quarter. Chuck Robbins, CEO of Cisco, thank you so much, Chuck, for coming on Squawk on the Street.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Carl.
All right. Good to see you. Carl, back to you.
All right, Jim, good stuff. Watching rates, of course, today as we get headlines from the likes of Bullard. Let's get to Rick Santelli. Hey, Rick.
Hi, Carl. You know, as we sit right now at 89 basis points for a 10-year note yield, we are now up one on the day, up seven on the week. And as you look at a two-day, you can see that the big feature was obviously we were trading lower yields, higher prices than yesterday, but it's starting to reverse a bit. Maybe part of that was the headline PPI this morning. It was a bit hotter than expected at 0.3. But it's more than that. It's just this generalized notion that at some point with vaccines and therapeutics out there, it's just a matter of when. And we know that we're going to have a tough time before we get there. But markets are always thinking ahead. Now, look at a month to date of 10s. This is fascinating as well, of course, because we continue to see that the month is shaped up to be virtually unchanged. We're about at the same place we ended last month as we are right now, maybe a basis point or two higher. So this is actually a key area as we once again look like we want to regain the 90 basis point handle. 1% is a big psychological area. Tens minus twos, we talk about the yield curve all the time, and definitely it did a beeline from close to 80 down to under 70. Now it's at 71 basis points, but when you put it against the KBW banking index, you can really see why many pay so much attention to it. As you see on this 1 month chart, the correlations are very strong. And finally, foreign exchange. We know that the Chinese currency day in, day out, week in, week out is doing better against the yen, doing better against the euro, doing better against the dollar. But the dollar's having a pretty good week all in all. It's having one of the rare weeks where it's up on the week, it's up a bit on the day. And should we be able to get a close eventually that's above 93.5, many technicians would turn a chart and make it a bit more bullish with regard to their outlook. Carl, Jim, back to you, and have a safe and happy weekend.
All right, same to you, Rick. Thank you. In the meantime, keep your eyes on shares of DraftKings. About a three-week high today as they have better-than-expected results and a raise on their revenue guidance. We'll talk about sports and betting with the CEO later on this morning. Stay with us. Some new developments regarding what would have been the world's biggest IPO. According to the Journal today, Chinese President Xi personally made the decision to halt Ant Group's $34.5 billion IPO after controlling shareholder Jack Ma angered government leaders by slamming tighter regulation in that speech he delivered last month, just days before Ant was set to go public in China. Jim, it's a harrowing piece and a harrowing notion that this could be moved in quite this way.
Yeah, people have to read this. I mean, the speech that he gave was viewed as seditious. I use that word rather than say treasonous because I think that you could say that this was dissent. And China tolerates no dissent. This was one where you said to yourself, holy cow, the communists don't want really, really rich people. And they're not about to have rich people upend what they're doing. It was, what an eye-opener, because this was a man I thought was the pride of China. And now he's the scourge of China. And I think he has to be careful. Has to be careful. That's what the essence of that article was. The Chinese are not going to tolerate anyone who's that wealthy who speaks out.
Although, Jim, the amount of wealth created by him and the prosperity he brought to so many Chinese, I mean, how long do you think China can sort of look that dark horse in the mouth?
Well, that was the thing. I mean, one of the reasons why I thought that he was the loved by the government is because he's created more wealth than anyone in the world. And I think that to really attack him, which is what I thought they were definitely doing, what she's doing, is to say, you know what, we don't care about wealth. What we care about is domination. And don't you dare cross us no matter what you do. And it was frightening. It was a reminder that they are, and I'll give Peter Navarro this, that they are a communist country that does not tolerate any dissent whatsoever.
Yeah, and one reason why a lot of people on the street don't expect big changes in the way we approach China as we change administrations. Dow's hanging on to 29.3. Squawk on the Street's back in a moment. Let's get to Jim and stop trading.
Here's something, Carl, we haven't seen in ages. Price target boosts General Electric by Barclays. Price chart raised 22%. Talking about gas-powered turbines, that would be turbine anywhere else other than GE. And I do think that this is a very positive piece, a vindication of what Larry Culp is doing. I think this piece is right. I think the stock's going to 11. I had Ford on last night, another one. It's a foot race. And I'll take Ford to 11. You can have GE, and we'll see you there.
Wow. This was six about a month ago. 11 would be quite a gain if Culp, we get there, Jim.
Culp's the real deal. He really is. I mean, I wish he didn't work 23 hours a day. If there were days that had 25 hours, he would work 24. That's how hard he's working, and he's succeeding. And I really believe in the company. It's doing a lot of right things. Tonight, Carl,
speaking of working 24-7.
I got Bill.com, and then I got one that's a roll-up, I'll admit it, Grow Generation Hydroponics in order to be able to grow pot. It is literally the tractor supply of cannabis. Who can tell? Who knows? I don't grow, I don't know. But it's legal here.
No, it's an amazing story. Jim, we'll see you tonight. Okay. Great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
All right, we'll see you later. Mad Money, 6 p.m. Eastern time.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.